We've had the news from the BBC. Now it's our time. Call us on country code 44 20 70 83 72 72. Welcome to World Have Your Say.
Hi there, I'm Ros Atkins. In September, the Occupy movement started in New York and it quickly spread across America and beyond. But in the last 48 hours, it's faced its sternest test. First in Portland, then Oakland. Camps were cleared. Then this morning in New York, police cleared the camp that had started the ball rolling. All of which leaves two pressing questions. Have the protesters in America been treated fairly? And what should be the next move of the Occupy movement?
Text us on country code 44 77 86 20 60 80.
Email what have you said at bbc.co.uk.
Well, this story has been dividing those of you getting in touch with the BBC all day long. Colleen, you're in New York. What's your reaction to what's happened?
It's about time that they moved them out.
Because you don't believe in what they say, or you think this is the wrong way to make that point?
They had nothing to say. That's the problem. They were not organized. It was mainly people from off the streets. When I walked through there, mainly papers were being given out as to how great communism is. It was a something I thought Obama thought was going to help this country, and it backfired on him.
You say it's poorly organized. One of the protest organizers is Karanja, who joins us on the phone from the same city as you, New York. Karanja, I'm sure you've got a different perspective on this. What's your take on the day's events?
Well, the day's events show that clearly the mayor is desperate, and that our fight on Wall Street is barely having an effect. If he was so confident about what he was doing, I'm sure he wouldn't have done it at 3 a.m. in the morning.
And what have you been trying to achieve? A lot of our listeners are slightly confused as to what your goal is.
I would be surprised if indeed your listeners are confused. I think the media is confused in their limited ability to understand what is going on, but actually I think that the public is very clear on what is going on. People understand on a very fundamental, intrinsic level that this is a movement that is calling for greater equality and greater fairness in the economic system.
So you're saying it's the media rather than people who are confused. Those of you listening, do you think there has been a clear message about what this movement wants to achieve and how it can achieve it? By all means, call us up. Country code 44 20 70 83 72 72. As we're talking about this, my mind is going back to programs we did in Cleveland with WCPN and in Fort Myers with a big audience at WGCU. 200 of you came along to Fort Myers, Republican voters, Democrats as well, and I'd say about 95% of you told us you supported what the Occupy movement was doing. So how do you feel now these camps are being dismantled? Call us up from the States at 01144 2070 83 72 72. Colleen, you're still with us. What about the issue of freedom of speech here? Don't these people have the right to come together and put their point?
This wasn't a matter of freedom of speech. I believe in rallies. I attend them myself. But this was camping out. The filth was incredible. These people really had no message, where if they had done it peacefully and went to the proper areas and spoke, not slept there with animals and people from off the streets, it was a very poor example of the American people.
Colleen, thank you very much for speaking to us. Karanja, too. I'll also mention Karanja has been editing a section of the Guardian newspaper's website. The section is called Comment is Free, and the Occupy movement has occupied that section of the website, if you like. So go along and see the conversations Karanja has been hosting. It's worth adding that Mayor Bloomberg has been explaining the actions in New York. He says there's a conflict between protecting public health and safety and the protesters' First Amendment rights. This is a quote. Unfortunately, the park was becoming a place where people came not to protest, but rather to break laws and in some cases to harm others. Well, let's go close to that park in downtown New York and speak to the BBC's Alex Collins. Alex, tell us exactly where you are and what's happening.
I'm on the southwest corner of Zuccotti Park on Cedar and Broadway, and it's a very much, you mentioned before, the sort of tussle between public safety and free speech. I'd say that tussle is definitely sort of manifesting itself in the atmosphere. At times it's very carnival-esque, and there's people who are excited to be back here after being sent away from Zuccotti Park. They've got banners saying, Occupy Wall Street, do it for the kids, and it all feels very jovial and energized. And then the next minute, there's a sort of flare-up, and there seems to be a very tense standoff between members of the public, protesters, and the police, who at the moment are guarding the site. It's quite something to look at, because when I used to come down here and do reporting, it was the space was absolutely crammed. You couldn't move around. There were so many different tents, there were so many different organizations, and literally, when you look at it now, it looks very skeleton-like, very barren. You wouldn't have even known that there was a huge movement which was on that site. And so that's where we are at the moment. There's people walking around, eager to get back and reclaim the space, whilst at the same time there's a sort of discussion about what to do next. Now that this has happened, what are the protesters going to do?
And Alex, just before we speak to some of the protesters, just clear this up for us. Do I understand it right that they've been cleared out, they are now allowed to return to the park, but they can't set up a camp, is that right?
Well, again, if that's the case, it's very unclear, because at the moment there's no one in the space. There's people walking around the outside of it, but the police at the moment are keeping that space clear of the protesters, and they're sort of maintaining this sort of guard. Now, with me, I've got Colleen here, who's a 20-year-old who was at the Occupy Wall Street protest last night. She wasn't actually in Zuccotti Park, but she was trying to get near it, and she actually got arrested last night. And I just want to pass over the headphones so we can hear her story about what she experienced. Okay, here you go. Just say hello.
Hi.
Hi, Nicole. How are you? My name's... Hi, I'm Roz. I'm speaking to you from London. Nice to have you on the program. Tell us what you've done today.
Oh, nice to talk to you. Today I got out of jail at 11:30, I think, and I walked back over the park, saw everything gone. Just sad to look at, really. It's just like, it used to be such a nice community and all these people and beautiful place, and now it's just nothing there. My home is gone, like, it's hard to look at.
I'm reading one tweet here from an American called Giovanni who says, stop occupying someone else's business space. If you want to change things, run for public office. What would you say to them?
I don't think politicians really serve the people well. I guess it's good if a protester becomes a politician, but once someone becomes a politician, I feel like it sort of corrupts their ideals. And, you know, like, you could have people who have good ideas, but once they get into political office, they're gonna turn a bit corrupt because there's all these different influences. You need to be supported by some people to make things happen, and, like, you can't have an uncorrupt politician, in my opinion.
Nicole, you're sounding a little down about the way the day has gone. I wonder what you're planning to do for the rest of the week. How will you continue your protest?
I have no idea. That's what I'm trying to figure out now. All the people that I've been spending all my time with, I can't find them because nobody here has phones. So I'm just trying to figure out what to do next, how to get back in touch with the people I care about, and figure out how to start over again.
Thank you very much for speaking to us, Nicole. We appreciate it. I wonder if you could hand back the headphones to Alex, our colleague from the BBC, because I've got a couple of other questions I'd like to ask Alex. In the meantime, let's bring in Debbie, who's on the phone from Ohio. She's a freelance writer. She's been writing about that move to shift the protesters out of Oakland. That happened yesterday morning. Debbie, for people who haven't seen your blog post, tell us where you stand on what happened in Oakland.
I believe that it's possible to be nonviolent and peaceful and still breaking the law, and law enforcement should act.
I mean, we might
even though lots of people have a great deal of sympathy with the points that are being put here. I don't understand your issue with people expressing themselves in this way.
Your right to express yourself only goes as far as my rights. These people are breaking the laws in their communities by camping in these parks that are open to everyone 24 hours a day. Some places they aren't open 24 hours a day. No one else gets to enjoy the facilities. They are infringing on other people's rights.
Well, stay there, Debbie, because I'm very curious to hear you talk with Keith, who's joining us from Taiwan. Just before I bring you in, Keith, I do want to go back to Alex from the BBC one last time. Alex, just give us a quick idea of what the night holds in New York tonight. What are the police planning? What are protesters planning?
Hi.
Okay, hello.
Hi, Alex. Hi, Alex.
Hello,
Rob. Hi, sorry about that. I was just wondering if you could tell me what the night holds for both the protesters and the police. What are both sides telling you about what might happen overnight?
Well, again, it's very unclear. Lots of things are moving. It's a very fast-moving story. Speaking to the police, they're generally quite tight-lipped about what they are planning to do for obvious reasons. And when you talk to protesters, some of them, this has clearly fired them up, and they're ready to take this protest to the next level. And I've heard all kinds of things. As I was walking around, someone gave me out a leaflet saying, stop paying your rent to your landlords. They're charging too much. And I've also heard that some protesters are creating a map of vacant buildings in Manhattan that have become vacant as a result of the recession, and they're going to start occupying those spaces, you know, making it much harder for the police in some ways to get access to the buildings and to remove them. So there's a lot of sort of movement going on. I think the real sense I get from this is, despite the fact that we saw protesters being cleared at sites in Oakland and Portland, it still caught them on...
And with that, it sounds like Alex's
York
connection.
Time, everyone was, it was a very peaceful atmosphere on the site. And then everyone, the next minute, you know, there were sanitation vehicles coming in with bulldozers and clearing the site. So I think the movement has been hurt today, but there's a sense that from a number of them that they're going to regroup and come up with a more audacious plan.
Thanks for bringing us up to date, Alex. If anything happens in the next 40 minutes or so, do come back on to, well, I'll have your say. Good news that your line held out there as well to the end. There's Alex Collins of the BBC in downtown Manhattan. Tom's in Dubai. He's tweeted, Occupy is the marginal but leading edge crowd. It's ahead of its time, but ultimately it isn't a mass movement. Gigi Ibrahim, who became very well known as a campaigner in Egypt during the Tahrir Square protest, she's got thousands of followers on Twitter. She has tweeted, Occupy Wall Street being tear gassed by the NYPD. Now Obama is starting to look like Mubarak pigs. This reassures me of how democratic the USA is. And Alexei's emailed the BBC from Russia to say, what kind of inequality are they protesting against anyway? In the US, they do have equal rights. You can tweet us using the WISE hashtag as we talk this through. We've still got Debbie, who's with us in Ohio. Let's bring in Keith, a freelance reporter based in Taiwan. He reported on a protest, an Occupy protest there, and he's up very late working nights. Keith, thanks for your time. Give us your perspective on what's happening in Taiwan, but also what's happening in America.
Well, first, actually, what happened here in Taiwan was rather unusual. I was contacted a few weeks ago to cover the protest that took place here in Taipei at the 101 building, where a lot of major banks and a lot of multinationals have their head offices. On the Facebook page that the Occupy Taipei movement had set up, there was something like 4,000 or 5,000 people saying they would attend. Well, the day that I went with my camera, like with the camera crew, there was maybe around 500. For the first hour, they just walked around the Taipei 101 building and then went in front of the main door, chanting all kinds of slogans, down with capitalism and everything else. It started to rain. The managers of the Taipei 101 building said, well, you know, I feel bad for them, so maybe we should just let them in to get out of the rain. So he opened the doors. He told the security, move aside, let them in. Everybody moved into the building in a very orderly fashion. Most people made their way down to the B level, where the food court is, and started eating lunch. And then I was there with my camera guy, and I said, we have to stay around for a bit. And then we saw people shopping in, like, Chanel and Louis Vuitton. It was just the most unusual thing. And I've been paying very close attention to what has been happening in the United States and writing a few articles for Taiwan media. And I honestly have to say, I predicted that this would just fizzle out the way it has. I'm surprised. Well, I shouldn't say surprised. I'm not surprised that the authorities took as long as they did to start clearing people out, because, you know, politicians, of course, have to worry about getting reelected, and it wouldn't look good, you know, if on their plate.
But Keith, let's bring in Debbie here as well. I'm feeling confused, because World Have Your Say broadcast from the States a fair amount over the past 2 months, and we did a couple of shows which particularly discussed this, and I was really struck. You kind of can imagine people of certain political leanings would naturally support the Occupy movement, but really very diverse groups of people, almost in their entirety, said they sympathized with the general principle that America's capitalist system needed to be changed, and now you're saying it's going to fizzle out. Debbie, why have I got confused here? What's happening?
Absolutely correct, and I'm chuckling at the politeness in Taipei, because I'm experiencing that in my own Occupy movement in Columbus, Ohio. They were dubbed the most polite protest group in the world by the local media. They're working with the city. The people sympathize. I sympathize with the basic premise that our corporations control our government. It's not a government of the people by the people anymore. It's a government of the corporations. But to effect that change, infringing upon everyone else's rights is not going to accomplish it.
So it's not so much about the sentiment, it's about the nature of the protest. I wonder if those of you in the States listening on public radio, on Sirius online as well at bbcworldservice.com agree with that. Do call us up, 01144 2070 83 72 72. John Kay has posted from Ghana on our Facebook page, the arrest of these protesters is really embarrassing, not just for Obama, but for the entire American people. And Larson, posting on the New York Daily Post website, says now they can go back to playing video games and smoking pot all day.
Well, you know, it's there's actually one thing that I want to mention at this point, if you could just indulge me just for a few seconds. But there was a piece that I wrote for a newspaper out of Japan, and when I was writing it about the Occupy movement, there was a song that came to mind, and the verse in the song is, "The folk singer came from America to sing at the Albert Hall. He sang songs of protest and fairest shares for all. He sang how the poor were much too poor and the rich too rich by far, and then he drove back to his penthouse in his brand new Rolls Royce car." I think this is probably the best way to describe some of the protesters. When I see protesters in New York and in other cities in the United States, and they have their very expensive iPads and iPhones connecting to G3 networks, which is not cheap, I kind of wonder, well, wait a second, if you're protesting...
Hold on, Keith, you can have a phone or own a computer and still object to the inequalities that a certain version of capitalism is delivering. Surely those two aren't necessarily in opposition.
No, they're not in opposition, but for example, there was a story that was on BBC a few weeks ago, and they interviewed a couple that came from, I'm not kidding, they came from Kennebunkport, Maine, to the Occupied Wall Street movement, and they were asked, how did they get to New York? And they said, well, our parents paid for our train tickets.
All right, I'll let people listening judge whether there's anything wrong with that. At the moment, World Have Your Say is live from London, where I am, from Ohio, which is where Debbie is, from Taiwan, which is where Keith is, and now we're also going to go to Cairo, because Lobna, Sharif, and Belle are all joining us live from there. Belle, maybe I could start with you. You're a freelance journalist in Cairo. Of course, your country has seen extraordinary protests earlier this year. How are you viewing what's happening in America?
Well, we're actually massively disappointed, really. I mean, at the moment, the London movement is facing an eviction as well, and with increasing pressure from the general public on the movement to move from St. Paul's. So seeing Occupy Wall Street fall, which was obviously the sort of start of this particular movement, is really very disheartening.
But what about this point from our Facebook group, Richard, saying they have to go away, regroup, and actually figure out how to do this in the long term? Isn't that a fair comment?
I mean, I think there is something to be said that they need to, they don't really have a choice. They have to regroup because they've been cleared from the square. I think, I mean, I've interviewed people in Occupy Wall Street and in London for several articles, and they were saying that they had a problem with the winter coming, and that they were thinking about how they can make it sustainable. So I think that's always been an issue. And I think, I think that's basically what they have to do, whether they like it or not now.
What about you, Lobner and Sharif? Let's bring you in.
I think they'll have to find new ways to continue. And already happened about 2 weeks ago when Auckland was evicted by force and people came back with a general strike in Auckland, fairly successful one. And they came back with a strike and then came back to the streets again and took back the Oscar Grand Plaza and occupied again. So, yeah, of course, after such, like, after like ending their occupation, they have to find new ways. But actually, I don't think they're going to stop, and I would advise them not to stop.
And Debbie, sorry, Sharif, I just wanted to bring Debbie in, and of course I'll come back to you. But Debbie, there is a perception among some of our listeners in the Middle East that America preaches one thing, but at home does another.
There is a vast misinterpretation of the First Amendment. We have all these freedoms. What those freedoms say is that the government can't tell you not to speak your mind, but they can still enforce the laws that are in place. You can go down there and you can chant and you can walk in circles 24 hours a day. You can't live in a public park.
Sharif, do you want to come in here?
Well, I think that, the fact that, you know, you're using kind of park regulations, health and safety and zoning regulations to do an end run around kind of an encampment or a protest like this is pretty ridiculous, if not kind of hypocritical. I mean, the idea that you can stand and chant for 24 hours but can't sleep, I mean, the difference in that is not one that I think reaches levels of kind of political expression. That's one where you're basically just trying to use something that seems quotidian to bring down an enormous amount of police force against people who are nonetheless chanting, marching, but also sleeping.
And actually, that's, I mean, if I can come in and comment, that's exactly, I mean, part of what Mubarak and Mubarak's regime used against us in Egypt. They said that people in Tahrir were using drugs, they had prostitution, there was issues of safety, there were issues of, like, they represented a hazard to people's safety. And that's exactly what they did. They would say that they're coming to the square to clean it because the square is dangerous. Exactly like what's happening now with safety codes and, like, health codes.
Well, those of you listening, we're really getting to the nub of this here with the difference in opinion between Debbie in Ohio, Lobner, and Sharif in Cairo. I wonder which side of this you come at it from. Do you think that comparisons can be made between what happened in Egypt earlier in the year and what's happening in America? Or are they quite different things? And also, do you feel that it was fair to say you can't just stay in this park indefinitely? Do call us up, tweet us, or email us. We'd love to hear from you.
BBC. A college dropout.
I think Steve always liked to think of himself as a rebel.
Who got fired from his own company.
I was a very public failure, and I even thought about running away from the valley.
Steve Jobs was no ordinary businessman.
But something slowly began to dawn on me.
And Apple became no ordinary business.
I still loved what I did.
Steve Jobs took a business on the brink of collapse and transformed it into one of the world's largest.
I consider Steve Jobs the greatest designer ever alive in the 20th century.
The BBC explores the legacy he left on the business world, upsetting the apple cart, the genius of Steve Jobs, online from the 15th of November at bbcworldservice.com.
Science affects the way we live, from the latest innovations in technology to the most recent medical breakthroughs. Discover a world of science every weekday on the BBC.
This is the BBC's World Have Your Say. It was around 1 a.m. when New York police arrived at the New York Park where the Occupy Wall Street protests have been based for the past couple of months. They told the demonstrators to leave, and that, in the end, was what happened. It's the strongest challenge yet to a movement which has spread to many countries. What, if anything, should its next move be?
BBC. BBC News with Ian Purden. The Turkish Prime Minister Recep Tayyip Erdogan has warned Syria's President Assad that the future of Syria cannot be built on the blood of the oppressed. Mr. Erdogan's latest condemnation of Syria came as his country said it would halt joint oil exploration projects with Syria. Meanwhile, the Syrian authorities have announced the release of more than 1,000 prisoners involved in the protests. The Italian Prime Minister-designate Mario Monti has succeeded in forming a new government to push through economic reform. He's expected to meet President Giorgio Napolitano and to name his cabinet on Wednesday. The authorities in the Philippines have prevented the former president Gloria Arroyo from leaving the country, despite the Supreme Court having overturned a government ruling banning her from travelling abroad. The former president, who's being investigated for alleged corruption, says she needs to leave the country to get help for medical reasons. Protesters in New York have remained on the streets after police cleared their two-month-old anti-Wall Street protest camp from a park in the financial district. Lawyers for the protesters have obtained a temporary court order allowing them to stay, but the mayor of New York said that the park would remain closed until the order was clarified. Meanwhile, police in Switzerland have cleared a camp in the centre of Zurich, where demonstrators pitched tents in a protest similar to the one held in New York. The senior British civil servant, blamed for allowing in thousands of immigrants without proper passport checks, is insisting that he did nothing wrong. Brodie Clark, who resigned as the head of the UK Border Force last week, has reaffirmed to a parliamentary inquiry that he did not order the relaxation of passport controls. A rare yellow diamond is being offered for sale at an auction in Geneva with an asking price of at least $11 million. The 110-carat stone, called Sundrop, is described as the largest and most perfect ever to be auctioned. BBC News.
You heard the news from the BBC. Now it's your turn. Call us on country code 44 2070 83 7272. Welcome. The world have your say.
I'm Razakins. We're discussing the Occupy movement and what future it has. Maureen's emailed us from New York. She says, Mayor Bloomberg's actions last night were intolerable. I feel incredible rage at these actions. I feel sick to my stomach when I think of what may come of all of this. Christopher's got in touch through facebook.com/worldhaveyoursay. He says, instead of protesting, I'm choosing to put my time into volunteer work in the hope of when the rebound does happen. I would hope that the protesters do something similar. This from Dan in Russia, who's emailed our Russian service. He says, at least in America, you can express your opinions and set up a camp. If you do it in Russia, brutal police will make you an invalid. And Glenn has tweeted, using the OWS hashtag, he says, could the Occupy Wall Street have scripted a more apt antagonist than a Wall Street billionaire who purchased his political office?
Phone country code 44 20 17 83 72 72.
Email what have you say at bbc.co.uk.
Jacob, listening to us in South Sudan, has just emailed saying, Dear Roz, please send me the World Have Your Say daily email. Jacob, I'll add you just as soon as the program's off air. And those of you who are keen followers of the BBC World Service, if you go to facebook.com/BBC World Service, you'll see that my colleague Bethan and Anna are collecting the details of which programs you like the most. So without meaning to be in any way biased, if you want to go there and say World Have Your Say, don't let me stop you. That's facebook.com/BBC World Service. Now let's go straight back to downtown New York because we can speak to Laura, who's there. Laura, I understand you're one of the protesters. Tell us what's happened to you today.
Well, I've been up all night. I didn't sleep, and it's been the afternoon now. I don't even know what time it is. And basically, we have surrounded Zuccotti Square, which is our old home, and the police are inside. They've cleaned out and taken away all the tents, and we have gathered around, and now we are sort of where the police used to be. We've switched sides, and now all the protesters are on the outside of the barricades, looking in.
And what's your plan?
So we just had a march arrive, about 200 people. I don't know what the plan is. I think the plan right now is to get back into the park and to possibly occupy another area as well. And there's a lot of ideas being thrown around and a lot of confusion, but we're certainly have tons of people here, and I think that we're going to get the park back. The injunction happened, and the amount of cops in the park is drastically reduced, so people are estimating that probably they're going to let us in the next few hours.
But if I've understood it right, you'll be allowed back in the park, but you won't be allowed to set up tents, so it's going to be impossible for you to stay there 24 hours a day.
Well, the injunction with the lawyers said that they had to give us back all of our property and all of our tents. And there's also different stories about whether or not the tents and all of the books from the public library and people's belongings were taken to the dump or whether they're being held and are supposed to be given back to us. That's also unclear.
Laura, help those listeners we have around the world who are not clear about the Occupy movement. Help us understand what precisely you hope will come of your efforts, your personal efforts in New York at the moment.
Well, I see the Occupy movement as a coming together of many different communities that are, you know, from the labor rights movement, the fair trade and fair labor movement, all of these different environmental movements against dirty energy, dirty coal, and all these groups have been separate for a long time, and I think that the Occupy movement is a coming together of these different voices in public space and talking it through and deciding what we can agree on, and I think that the Declaration of the Occupation, which is this beautiful document that was written by the General Assembly, that really shows that there is a unified problem that all of us see, which is the corporate control of our government and our lives. So I think most people are really focused on regulation of campaign finance reform, regulation of corporations, and bringing back, you know, a lot of environmental regulations as well.
Laura, we can hear you very, very clearly indeed. There's a slight delay on the line, but we're going to certainly put up with that because we've got guests in Cairo and in Taiwan and in Ohio, and I'm certain they would appreciate the chance to speak to you and maybe ask you a question or two. Keith is a freelance reporter based in Taiwan. Keith, you've been listening to Laura. Is there a question you'd like to ask her?
There is one question that I would like to ask Laura, because this is a question that I asked somebody when I did a piece on the Occupy movement in New York City. My question was to them, well, what is it you want? Exactly what is it you want? Nobody was able to give me a direct answer. Somebody said jobs, which I find kind of difficult to believe, because if I live here in Southeast Asia, and when I travel around, if I go to any U.S. embassy in Southeast Asia, and I've been to a number of them, you will see people lining up to take jobs in the United States that Americans won't do. So how can you say there are no jobs? Because there's people willing from China, from Sri Lanka, from India, from Bangladesh to go to the United States to work.
I think that what we're really asking for is economic justice, and the system here is really broken. I mean, we have a major recession, and there's a massive lack of jobs. And yes, of course, it's such a huge country that we have tons of foreigners coming in, and you know, immigration is what made this country. So having an abundance of jobs is really important. But I, for one, have seen many of my friends and even my parents have their either their hours or their jobs completely taken away. And there is a massive problem here with employment.
Laura, thanks for responding to Keith's question. Let's bring in Lubna, Sharif, and Belle. I don't know which one of you would like to ask Laura a question.
Well, I just wanted to respond to the gentleman in Taiwan. I mean, I don't know if he's been paying attention. I mean, this issue of debates has gone on for weeks, and it's very clear, I mean, that, you know, this is beyond jobs. This is beyond any single debate. I don't know how you can pick one person's answer and assume that it's representative. But more than that, I mean, again, this is the same talk that we heard from Mubarak and his supporters that were like, oh, you want jobs? Oh, you want housing? I mean, no, people are coming out and saying that the system as a whole is broken. I mean, and this is something that we saw in Cairo, that we're seeing in Europe, and that we're seeing in the United States. And I think that to kind of try and snipe on individual kind of small demands just completely undermines the fact that people are out there seriously attempting to change things and, you know, kind of rationalizing away the fact that people in embassies in, you know, other countries are asking for jobs that Americans don't want doesn't invalidate for a moment what the people in the Occupy movement are doing.
So, Sharif, you had a point to make. Lubna, do you have a question?
I wonder if I can ask Laura if they had already made any like general assemblies or discussed what, how to move from here. What's the next step going to be? If there is any conversation, if there is other conversation with, conversations with people in the Occupy movement around the US.
There definitely are a lot of GAs. They're a little more spontaneous than usual, but I have heard that at 7 p.m. tonight, no matter where we are having a GA. I also have heard that we have a massive amount of protests happening on Thursday, which is the two-month anniversary of Occupy Wall Street. And because of the eviction that happened today and the anger around the country, that a lot of other occupies, like Boston and cities that are nearby, are actually sending people here to be a part of Thursday and a part of this huge march that's going to happen. So there's a lot of solidarity, and I think that the eviction today and the police brutality and the fact that they stole all of the tents and goods and bags that people had inside has just made the movement stronger. People are angry, and there are more people here than ever.
It's worth adding, Laura, that the police have said they instructed all demonstrators to pick up personal belongings and that those personal belongings left behind are going to be put into storage, not destroyed in any way. But let's also just ask you one last question before you go. Could you just look around where you are and describe to people listening all around the world what you can see?
Well, it's a beautiful day, and Zuccotti Park, the trees are changing color, so they're all golden. And there's a big New York sightseeing bus with tourists and all their cameras coming by, and hundreds of people and cameras and signs, and a really beautiful Statue of Liberty puppet. And not many cops, really. They've really thinned out, and I would estimate maybe 60, 70 cops here. And people seem to be in really good spirits. A lot of music and chanting, and people are just kind of circling and circling the park.
Thank you very much for speaking to us, Laura. We appreciate your time. Apologies to those of you listening for those slight glitches on the line. We're using this new bit of newish bit of kit called a Comrex. It's brilliant. It allows us to broadcast in studio quality on a 3G network. That is a seriously good development as far as broadcasting in studio quality is concerned. Every so often you might get a glitch like that, but I hope you'll agree that it's worth it because we could hear Laura so clearly. Debbie, you're in Ohio. You've been listening to Laura lay out her concerns and what she's trying to achieve. Did you shift at all in your opinion that these protesters should go home?
I have been known in my life as a bleeding heart liberal. I voted for Obama. I really despise corporate greed. But to hear someone describe public property as her home, that she was evicted from public property, and that law enforcement stole their belongings when they were exercising the law, I have no sympathy.
Patty's in Detroit, not a million miles away from you, Debbie. She says this movement will take a deep breath, then I think it will come together as one voice, putting candidates forward much the same as the Tea Party. Well, there is a thought, Patty. I wonder if those of you listening in the States, obviously you are all able to vote in US elections. If there were Occupy candidates, would you consider putting a mark by the name of those candidates? Do let us know. Country code 44-2070-83-72-72. I know a lot of you listen at your desks at work. If you'd rather email us, it's worldhaveyoursay@bbc.com. Ash Bell's following the discussion from Nigeria. He posts at facebook.com/worldhaveyoursay. It says, finally, the so-called developed world can learn from us. Finally, they're having a test of how poverty affects people regardless of how educated they are. Well, let's switch back from Nigeria, back to Ohio, not where Debbie is, but to Dayton, because Ron is on the phone. Hi, Ron. Welcome to World Have Your Say. What's your view of what's happened to the Occupy movement over the past couple of days?
Well, that's a pretty big question. I certainly support Americans in their right to exercise their voice and also peacefully assemble. I think in New York there, if they were occupying public land and it was deemed to be a health problem, I understand where that's coming from as well. So I see both sides of that. I also wonder if I had a chance to ask Laura, I was curious if she felt that they could get their message out as effectively with smaller protests, even for just a couple of hours in front of different corporate headquarters, that sort of thing.
Well, Ron, I can't put that point to Laura because she had to go, but I can bring in Lubna and Sharif and Bell in Cairo, who in very different circumstances were involved in that huge, single, ongoing protest in Tahrir Square. And I wonder, the three of you, do you think you benefited from having a certain scale to that protest, or could the same impact have been achieved through lots of smaller protests, as Ron is suggesting?
I think when we have a big sit-in or an occupation, it's definitely very different from small protests. Taking a place and living in it and making of it an example of the kind of society we want to live in is actually was the most powerful thing that happened in Tahrir and other places around the country. Definitely there should be other occupations, as in Wall Street, and there is already, but definitely an occupation is very different from a protest.
I can see on the screen in front of me that Ruth is joining us. She's in Brooklyn, New York. So we have the three of you in Cairo, Keith in Taiwan, Debbie and Ron in Ohio, and Ruth now in Brooklyn. Ruth, go ahead. What are your thoughts on today's events?
Well, I completely support the occupiers. I believe that, you know, democracy is a messy process, and sometimes you have to put up with a lot of inconvenience. I have definite sympathy for the people who have to live and work around the demonstrators, but I think it's the price you pay for freedom of speech. And this is a form of freedom of speech. And they're right in the heart of where the corporate America is. And they're making a very loud, profound statement. The idea of evicting them is abhorrent to me, because, I mean, they could send people in to clean up, they could do a lot of things, but they're really basically trying to make a decision. Okay, you acted out like naughty children, we put up with it, but now it's time to have your temper tantrum should be over, and that's not what it is.
Ruth, there's a message here from a gentleman called Terence, who, judging by his surname, I think is from Ghana, and he raises a point on Twitter that I've seen a few times now, and he says the protesters need to find better ways of bringing about change in America rather than lazying around all day, to use his phrase. Do you have any sympathy?
I have been at coach. There's nothing lazy about it. You're uncomfortable almost all the time. All your basic needs are hard to meet. Maybe they're getting food sent in, which they are, but everything else, bathing, sleeping comfortably, there's nothing lazing around about it. There may be some people for whom this is an adventure rather than a mission, but it's still a very, it's part of our culture and our process. And my experience was with anti-war demonstrations. They're not fun. If people think that this is some kind of, I do believe that they have to articulate more, but this is not a something that's been led. This is not about a particular ideology. This is about a basic American rights. The right to protest, the right to assemble, all our basic rights.
And Ruth, and I should just reiterate what Mayor Bloomberg said, Michael Bloomberg, Mayor of New York. He said there was in this park a conflict between protecting public health and safety and protesters' First Amendment rights. I read this quote earlier, but it's worth reading again. He says, "The First Amendment gives every New Yorker the right to speak out, but it does not give anyone the right to sleep in a park or otherwise take it over to the exclusion of others. Unfortunately, the park was becoming a place where people came not to protest, but rather to break laws and in some cases to harm others. Ruth, thank you very much for being with us live from Brooklyn, New York. I can see here tweets. I don't think they're listening to the show, but tweets from two of America's best-known commentators. The filmmaker Michael Moore says, it's too late. Tens of millions of Americans won't let the Occupy momentum stop. They want the banks stopped, and they want their America back. And Nicholas Kristof of the New York Times says on Twitter, could Bloomberg be a secret Occupy Wall Streeter? He seems to have just revived the movement. Keith, I wonder in Taiwan whether you agree with that, that actually the act of clearing these camps may revitalize a movement which was maybe reaching for a medium-term plan.
I think what's going to happen, they are going to try to regroup. I think one of the big problems that the Occupy movement has had is that there hasn't been, let's say, some media savvy people that could actually get their point across. You know, we hear these things like, you know, we represent the 99%. I mean, Ruth, just a moment ago in Brooklyn, you know, okay, all these protesters there and it's uncomfortable. They can't get water. They can't sleep. People and everything else. That's okay, fine. But I would like to know how many of these protesters are there for really something that they believe in. And from what I see overseas and from what happened here in Taipei, it seems that there's a small group of them that really believe and strongly believe in what they're doing. And the rest of them are just people that show up because it's cool and it's a fun thing to do.
It's not that fun sitting out in a park night after night, freezing cold conditions in New York, uncomfortable in a tent. I mean, that's not that. I can think of more fun things to do.
Well, of course you can think of more fun things to do. Everybody can. But, you know, how many of them are doing it as a way to, let's say, rebel? How many are doing it as a way to have a little bit of adventure in their lives? So, you know, a lot of the protesters that
but
are
Keith,
there, I
you
look
could
at them
say
and
that,
I, yes?
And I'm sure the guests in Cairo will want to pick up on this. You could say that about any protest movement ever.
Well, yes, you can. And what happened in the Middle East, and in particular in Cairo, I mean, there were people in the Occupy movement in New York that were saying, you know, this is just like what happened in the Middle East. Well, no, it isn't. The protesters in Cairo against the Mubarak regime and other areas of the Middle East had a specific goal. They had a specific goal. This really has no specific goal except bring down the banks, bring down the big corporations.
Well, I mean, whether you agree with those goals or not, we did hear from Laura giving a few more specifics than the first protester, Nicole, who we spoke to. I'm curious to bring in Lubna and Sharif and Belle here who are listening to what you're saying, Keith. Which one of you would like to pick up on this issue?
I have two comments. I think many of us have comments.
Actually, you all have comments to say.
First of all, I would like to comment on the issue that here in Egypt we had specific demands. Yeah, we had a specific demand of bringing down the regime, bringing down the system, having freedom, dignity, and social justice. I think you can't get more vague than that, first of all. Second, about the fun thing. First of all, from my personal experience, camping out in the streets, waiting for cops to basically beat you up at any moment is not fun. Camping out in the cold that's coming to New York especially really soon isn't fun, but people make it fun. We had a lot of fun in Tahrir. We were being attacked, people were being killed, people were being injured, but we had fun as well, because that's why we're there. We're there to build a community. We're there to have fun and to protect the place that we want from it to build the future of our society. So fun isn't bad. And it's not completely fun, but when we have fun, it's not bad. There's something to shame people into.
Can I add a point in there as well? I think asking for a specific demand is actually missing the point. I think the system is so sort of messed up that the whole purpose of occupying rather than protesting is to come together, to put together a new, to have a conversation, to have, you know, participatory politics, to invent a new form of democracy, which needs to happen through conversations, which needs to happen by people being in the same place together to talk. You can't if you come to the square with demands. I mean, that's sort of bizarre and missing the point. And I think this is the biggest problem that the Occupy movement and actually the Arab Spring has faced, is people not understanding what the importance of being in these spaces and talking about a new form of politics.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, as well, the interesting thing is you talk about people who are just coming for a bit of adventure. We had thousands of those people who came into the square, whether it was for a bit of adventure or even to just, like, swear at us or to have some popcorn and walk around with their girlfriend, but who ended up staying and, you know, becoming politicized, engaging in discussions, experiencing what was happening, and, you know, participating within this political community. I mean, the fact that politics is supposed to be some sort of dour process whereby one kind of, you know, has to be intently serious and go in knowing exactly what one wants is just ridiculous. I mean, I think people's dissatisfaction has brought them to the point of recognizing that there's no demand and there's no need because there's no one to put demands on. People want to build the new and they will do that as they as a process. And that's why the champion's important.
Sharif, Bell and Lubna, thank you very much for being with us from Cairo. Keith in Taiwan and Debbie in Ohio. Thanks to you as well. I'm saying thank you because we're going to end the show with three quick callers from New York State. Well, first of all, Elizabeth, in New York City itself, what's your thought? What are your thoughts, Elizabeth, today?
Well, I think that the Occupy movement that started on Wall Street has helped to refocus a national dialogue and indeed an international dialogue on everyday people and the ways in which so many people are being left behind by the economy. So whatever other goals people may have in the Occupy movement, whatever conversations or demands may be happening, the international conversation that's focusing on individual people's needs, individual people's economic rights, that conversation is much more focused now in a way that it hadn't been 6 months or even nine weeks ago. That's really important, and I think the world is watching.
Good to speak to you. You're certainly right on that last point, Elizabeth. The world is definitely watching. This has been one of the most followed stories of the last 48 hours. Janie, you're in New York State. Tell us exactly where you are and your comment.
I'm in the East Village, and I was shocked to find out this morning. I was very shocked and saddened to find out that they'd done the eviction overnight. And I've really supported what they did and the way they changed the dialogue. A couple of years ago, I took part in a march that was organized by many unions against the banks, and that got very little media attention, whereas the very intelligent people that ran the occupation really changed the whole dialogue nationally. It was changed from the deficit, which had been the main topic before, to just so many kinds of economic injustice going on right now. And I think there were a lot of people down there with different specific demands. A friend of mine had a sign that said reinstate Glass-Steagall, which is a specific piece of banking regulation. So not everyone has the same opinion, but it's gotten people really talking. And I was just amazed at the intelligence and creativity and heart of the people down there.
Thank you for coming on the program, Janie. You're our last caller today, Janie, in the East Village in New York. George Zornick has tweeted, New York City authorities clearly feel the Occupy eviction is just and reasonable. That's why they're doing it at 2 a.m. and barring all of the press. And Ari Melba in New York tweets, sign at Zuccotti Park right now. It reads, Obama, say something. Well, if you want to say something, do carry on the conversation at facebook.com/worldhaveyoursay. Lots of you, follow us through the World Have Your Say podcast. If you're not subscribed to that but would like us to send you an MP3 of the show every single day, you can sign up. If you go to, either put World Have Your Say and podcast into your search engine, that will get you there straight away. Or go to worldhaveyoursay.com, scroll down, and you'll see the podcast button. Speak to you at the same time tomorrow. Goodbye.
BBC. One small.